Good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, or good evening. Today, we're going to do more traveling, and I hope you like it. Also, we are going to discuss about the topic, which of course you can see in your stream. It's called Turning Away, Turning Within, Turning Within. Now I know that is probably very difficult to translate because it is a sutra in a sense, but I want to talk about how that sutra relates to our spiritual evolution. And I want to speak about how the turn creates a new situation which can be very beneficial for us. This new situation can be something very advantageous for us, something very useful for us, something which can be inspiring and, shall we say, expanding. When you are facing something, you are pointed towards it. You are looking at it. You are expressing yourself directly, face to face with a thing. When you are turning away from something, you change your focus, you change your emphasis, you change the direction within which your consciousness is faced. Your turning means that what was before is no longer the focus of your attention. It is now something which you're putting aside, perhaps temporarily, perhaps permanently, and you're moving, turning to a new direction. Turning away does not necessarily mean rejecting. I'm using it here in the sense of changing your emphasis, changing the way in which you are directing your consciousness. Directing your consciousness away from a certain perspective, a certain direction, and moving it to one which perhaps for you, I know for me, is a better perspective. Now, for those of you who have been with me for the last many years, this is not a new topic, yet there are many people joining us who have not really heard me discuss this in great detail. For them, I'm going to repeat and move forward with this discussion, because it is very important that we periodically reassess our present situations and see if they are relevant to us. Sometimes we accept situations because we've always accepted them. It's called the status quo. Status quo means it has been like that previously. It should remain like that now. In the science of coaching, there is something they have labeled the gremlin. Gremlin is like a little creature who sits on your shoulder. That gremlin's business is to constantly tell you, don't change. Don't do things differently. Keep everything the same. That's the best thing to do. And yet, often, it's not the best thing to do. Often, the best thing to do is something else. Often, the best thing to do is to change slightly, radically, or in some significant way. Yet the gremlin's job is to keep us in a fearful condition, holding on to whatever we have right now. The gremlin says, if you make changes, you will lose what you have. Now, perhaps in some economic situations, that might be a good advice. Perhaps in some political situations, that might be a good advice. When it comes to evolution, though, It's usually a bad advice. Because evolution is nourished by change. Because the whole concept of evolution includes transformation. And that transformation means the status quo is challenged. I would propose that it's healthy and it's beneficial for people to allow transformation to take place, to allow change to take place. So turning away directly refers to turning away from our attachment to seeing things the way we used to see things. Specifically with the concept where we say, I have seen things like this always. I must see things like this because this is the way I see things. Now, it is not necessarily so that just because you have seen things that way, you must see them that way. It's your choice to see them that way. And being bold to experiment, to allow yourself to see in a deeper way, is a very artistic way of perception. It is very important that we allow ourselves the freedom to move, to flow, to go with positive transformational energy. Now, it is very important when one is engaged in such a transformational situation that one gives oneself the right to do things in a way which one may not ordinarily do. Perhaps take a chance. Hello? Therefore, when I say turning away, I mean don't be attached to a particular way of seeing things. Don't be attached to a particular way that things have always been. But always keep yourself free. Turn away from the status quo. And turn within. Turn within to the actual nature. Turn within to actually what it is that makes you feel as a person, your essence. Now, actually, that was just an introduction to what turning away, turning within really means. And specifically, when we are speaking about this transformational evolution, we have to go into subjects which will be related to the various forms of travel we do together. We have to allow ourselves to be totally open to new experiences. Because to whatever degree we do not allow ourselves, to that degree these experiences shall remain hidden to us. For example, when you travel in the mystic way we do periodically, if your mind says, no, that cannot be, no, that should not be, and you turn away, that's not the kind of turning away we're speaking about. I am speaking about turning away from this idea that, no, this cannot be, no, I cannot do that, no, that is not right. And I mean, when one has such experiences which are unexplainable according to logic and reason, that one should turn within and simply allow these experiences to take place. Sometimes people think a lot about life. Much thought, much consideration, much back and forth about what it is or what it could be or what it should be. And in that thought and in that consideration, there are many discussions. There are many specific questions and different things that must be analyzed and answered. And in such considerations, the mind is the most active feature. The mind wishes to be very absorbed in the activity of analysis, be very absorbed in the activity of throwing around the different considerations and churning them around continuously. Now, the mind is definitely experienced, there's no doubt about it, but it's a very specific kind of experience that is rather one-dimensional. Okay, two-dimensional. It does not give one really the taste of the experience, but rather gives one the impression of it, or the, shall we say, vision of it, but not really the taste. Now, a complete experience is something which is very deep within the essence of us, where we feel, where we receive energy in a very powerful way. And when we travel to different dimensional realms, our minds are not our vehicles. Our minds are our brakes. Just like a car has brakes, the mind of the dimensional traveler is the brake, is the mechanism to slow it down, to stop it. Now, this can be a very, shall we say, troublesome, a very scattering energy that deviates us from what we really wish to accomplish or what we really wish to experience. Therefore, when you are doing an interdimensional journey, the mind is something that you turn away from, at least temporarily. One requires a certain childlike quality to accept experiences as they are without filtering them through a mind. That is what is so wonderful about children. They don't filter their experiences through the status quo gremlin or through their conditioning. They smile. They accept it. They are gleefully enjoying their experiences. Well, I mean, at least if they're happy ones. And even if they're negative ones, they just accept them totally as they are. They cry. They object. They don't close themselves within about it. They express it. No, I don't like it. But there is a time in every child's life when experiences and their reactions to the experiences become repressed and their mind takes over. They no longer simply relate directly, moment by moment. They cancel their reaction to an experience to a later point. And by turning away from their internal energy, their internal experiencing, they turn away from the experience itself. But when you do this in your adult existence, it sets boundaries. It sets kind of blinders, like on a horse they used to use in the old days on the road. It limits your capacity to understand and experience all things. So one has to remain, or actually wrong word, one has to again allow oneself the luxury of the childlike innocence, the childlike capacity to experience. This childlike innocence is the key to all travel, all development, all, in fact, extremely advanced forms of evolution. Now, one may say that that sounds contradictory because children are not considered to be very capable of highly sophisticated forms of experiences or evolutionary practices. That, to some extent, is true, but that's not the point we are making here. Specifically, we are speaking about the childlike capacity to accept everything that is within our experience without filtering it out, without saying, no, that cannot be, or no, that should not be. To not stop or to not resist experiences, but to simply accept them, because that is the way life is in the childlike state. Now, this state is actually the natural state of pure, unencumbered energy. It is energy which is not wrapped up in a straitjacket of the mind. And that's a very good analogy, the straitjacket, because it does refer to mental insanity. It is a consciousness, an energy, an awareness which accepts all experiences as they are without trying to push them or mold them to what we think or expect they should be. If you think about what should be, this is a conception which is based upon many factors which may or may not be true or relevant to us. When we speak about should, we speak about things that we have accepted from our upbringing in our families, or the training in our religions, or the training in our social morals. All of these shoulds directly relate to things which we have accepted from outside of our experiences. Or not experiences, but outside of ourselves. Whereas if we are just aware of what is, without trying to transform it into something that we feel it should be, we become much more open and capable of interdimensional perception. And when you journey, what you do is, you do go somewhere, but you do allow your awareness to accept all of the experiences, all of the feelings, and all of the understandings that come with the new situation. To that degree that you allow that to take place, you will have a wonderful experience. To that degree you restrict that from taking place out of fear, whatever it may be, you will reduce your experience. There are some people who don't even believe there are other dimensions. There are people who think it's completely ridiculous. There are people who think that there's something wrong with it. These people are already saying, no, I shall not be aware. There are people who say, I cannot do that. There are people who say, it's not possible. There are people who say, it's my imagination. For them, they block out their experiences, even while they're happening. And yet there are people who, with a childlike innocence, enter into their experiences without expectations, with a wide open consciousness and awareness, and just accept whatever takes place, and reciprocating with it moment by moment. The key is the reciprocation, the acceptance of all that is coming within your awareness, and the moment-by-moment appropriate reciprocation is the key to continuing and going deeper into the experience. Just like if I say hello to you and you say nothing back to me, that limits the conversation right there. In this situation of traveling interdimensionally, it's better to err. It's better to make an error on the side of doing more attempts to reciprocate than less. For example, if you hear hello, it would be even better to err by saying hello, hello, rather than to simply go, did I hear something? So let's move on to another aspect of this, which is the real key to today. If you wish to speak about childlike innocence, there must be a mother who supports the child, that gives the child the security to actually manifest innocence without fear. Innocence and fearlessness go hand in hand. It is very, very, very important that we understand the innocence in terms of the security that the innocent one feels. Because without that, it is a troublesome situation, such innocence. The specific reason we are, shall we say, averse to this innocent state is because we have experienced that in such innocence we become exploited and harmed. That is our life experience since we've been a child. And therefore, we resist any attempt to go back to that innocent state because we feel that there could be a serious threat to our existence. Anything can happen. Now, whether or not we are fully aware of it, this is actually the main mechanism which prevents us from being fully aware in interdimensional travel. Therefore, being free from fear and being secure in what we are in ourselves and secure in our situation is the key to success. Now again, how does a child maintain its childlike innocence? When it is in the arms, when it is under the protection of the mother. Now, we are obviously not speaking about our physical, biological mothers of this life or any previous or future lifetime. We are speaking in more general terms, or rather more specific terms, it depends on how you want to look at it, which relate to the universe around us. If you just think about it rationally for a second, not that I mean we should do this all the time, but just for the sake of discussion, think about it rationally for a second. When you do interdimensional travel, there is an enormous capacity to fear. Just think about the Vikings or Columbus going across the Atlantic Ocean. Most people thought they would fall off the edge of the earth. These people had no idea where. They had no idea even if they had enough water to get to somewhere. Just consider it. You go out in a boat, you have absolutely no idea when or even if you're ever going to see land again. Can you imagine the courage of such persons? You cannot. It's inconceivable. You could simply be sailing forever and all die on that boat, or sail off the edge of the earth because maybe it was true. Maybe the earth was flat and all the water went down. When you go in an interdimensional journey, you are basically traveling on a boat going somewhere. Could be anything. So therefore, security is essential. Forget for a second Columbus or anybody crossing the Atlantic, because these were men. They were willing to take the chance for money. They were willing to take the chance for fame. We're not talking about that. Because we're talking about children. We're talking about a childlike consciousness that doesn't try to cross oceans, that is simply absorbed in understanding the immediate surroundings. The child doesn't have to go anywhere. The parents take the child where the child goes. Because there's that security there, that basis, that foundation, which gives the child the full sanction, approval, to just experience and absorb with awareness. Now, you don't have to worry when we do our travels because, basically speaking, I am taking the role of the driver of the vehicle. And at one point, we walk together into a new experience. But at point, we come in contact with the mother to hold us, to support us, to give us freedom from fear and simply empower us to open our awareness with complete clarity. Now, coming in contact with this feminine, nurturing, protecting, secure energy is very essential for our evolution. It gives us freedom from fear, which is like the basic, most fundamental and important aspect of expanding awareness. To simply accept this energy, to be held by it, to feel it, is so wonderful. To simply allow ourselves to be held is such an important capacity in such journeying. Now, within this universe, within our realm within which we interdimensionally travel. Mother Parvati holds us. Mother Parvati embraces us. She gives us freedom from any worry that something could possibly go wrong because everything is suddenly so right. Those fears we've had through our life, those anxieties, those frustrations, all seem to dissolve. The mind is no longer the most important factor. It becomes insignificant. We feel safe, we feel secure, we feel embraced within her loving arms. And when we accept that, we can accept the childlike state of full awareness with great enthusiasm. And in that childlike state of awareness, those experiences which are unique to us may be accepted. I may deliver you to the arena of such experiences. It is your experience from that point on. Talking about it is useless because everybody's experience, everybody's situation is unique to them in relationship between themselves and their mother. Now, the next stage is as important and as essential as any of the rest. Where there is the mother, there is the father. The father gives the mother the security to give the child the security to be fully aware without fear. Yet it is the mother who nourishes the child's enthusiasm. It is the mother who nourishes the father's enthusiasm to even engage in such an activity. Energetically, it is a perfect symbiotic relationship where everything works as a complete whole. Now, I know there are some who have certain prejudices to understanding things in this way. For their sake, I'm now going to explain this from another point of view, which may help them or assist them to understand the importance of this particular discussion. Now, let us accept, which I think should not be difficult to do, that Radha and Krishna are the supreme whole of all existence. We don't think of Radha and Krishna as mother and father. We never think of them like that. They don't have such a role. It is completely foreign to the way we consider them. Indeed, we specifically think of them as lovers. And if there is any understanding of the role of God as father, it is divorced or separated from Radha, his wife or lover. Now, she's not wife, but I'm just using that as an example. In fact, it is so divorced, it is so detached from this conception of father and mother and family and cohesive social or familiar or supportive arrangement that they're not even married. You've got Radha and Krishna in a lawless love which is bound by nothing whatsoever that we have conception of. Radha has no control over Krishna as a wife would. Krishna has no control over Radha even as a girlfriend. In fact, she's married to someone else. He's married to others later on. They are in another kind of a category completely, which bewilders almost everybody. They're just so transcendental to any experience we have within this world. Of course, we have experiences of men and women being illicit and enjoying each other on side kind of relationships, but we don't depend on them as the sources of everything, as the rulers and controllers of all. They're just people. Now, people naturally have a tendency to worship the Supreme. So Krishna, as God, or whatever name you want to give him, is a very useful and a very comfortable conception. God, Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, whoever. You've got a male, supreme, dominating God, the supreme controller, the supreme enjoyer, the supreme source of everything. We've discussed this in great detail in the past. I'm not going to repeat it and bore you. But let me just finish this particular discussion by saying he is divorced from the relationship with God the Father, with mother. The mother is no longer there. It's just God the Father. And therefore, so many problems come. Again, fear. Again, anxiety. Again, the lack of internal nurturing. And because of that, it's very hard to turn within. It's very hard to feel that childlike innocence, because there's always so many considerations, rules and regulations and procedures and structures. So the mother is essential in a relationship with mother and father. But as soon as you put mother and father, you lose the essence of Radha and Krishna. Who are you going to use? Rukmini Krishna? It's very difficult to see them as the supreme personality of Godhead. You see Rukmini as part of the associates. You see them as a pastime. You see them as an enjoyment for Krishna. The closest you get is to Lakshmi and Narayan, which is also not a very satisfying situation when you're speaking about relationships within the complete whole within this universe, because they're again worshipful lords. We don't have that kind of security with them, the childlike innocence with them. And just seeing Radha as mother is troublesome. It's something which she is naturally, but something which just doesn't seem to work fully. Radha is passionate. Radha is extremely feminine in the sense of attracting. She's the most attractive. She's focused on attracting Krishna. She's the girlfriend. Now, although we don't like to think about it, your mother was like that too. Your mother probably is like that too. But you don't see it. There's a certain respectful distance in that sense, between children and parents. If you were to see your mother as a passionate person, it would give you a big trouble. It creates a conflict in the mind. Therefore, we separate mother and lover. Now, Radha and Krishna are lovers. All the way. We are not talking here about mothers and fathers. We're talking about lovers, boyfriend and girlfriend, and young at that. Teenagers, young lovers. Teenage, passionate, pure, intense, and energetic sensuality and love. Yet, at the same time, these are personalities who have all encompassing omnipotence and power. So this whole existence is within the framework of this teenage, lawless, sensual, pure love, full of the future, full of life, full of energy, fearlessness, idealism, full of passion. Full of that enthusiasm which keeps the spirit ever evolving, everywhere, churning, transforming, progressing. Do you catch on? That the thing that makes everything click, the thing that makes everything have its life, have its essence, have its taste, is that wonderful connection between Radha and Krishna. So naturally, those who hear about this and those who wish to expand themselves have the idea that we're going to go directly from where we are now to there, where they are, and somehow participate in what they are doing, because that is the best thing to do. The difficulty comes not in the conception, but in the actual execution of that desire. And without going into a long discussion, which is not needed, the actual experience may not relate specifically with the actual experience. In other words, that which is experienced is not necessarily the actual experience the conception wishes to have. It is an experience. It is nice. I mean, if you get there, it is nice. It's fine. It's great. But it's not necessarily the actual experience that is available to those who go there in another way. And the only way you can understand that is to actually get there in another way. I know that sounds a little bit strange, and I'm going to try to explain that a little bit more. It's difficult to put into words. For there are different sets of awareness, of different sets of experiences that we, who are limited to a certain extent, are given access to. And the way in which we can experience this is very unique to ourselves and our relationship as an energetic being with the sources of all energy. So, to understand this better, let us understand how that supreme seed of all energy everywhere, that supreme constant source of the flux of all existence everywhere, gives the energy flow to us and allows us to come back through that same energy flow to the source. Now, we live physically within this multidimensional universe, yet we are most aware on a three-dimensional plane on Earth. And this dimension, or shall we say, this space of the universe with all of its dimensions, which are much more than the three, has a certain reservoir of energy within it, a certain dimensional space within it. For us to move through these dimensional spaces requires that we go from where we are now, as opposed to simply tuning ourselves to the ultimate destination and directly transmitting ourselves there. You might be able to get there through direct transmission. I can't say. People try. People talk about it all the time. They think they can. Let's put aside that consideration because it's not relevant, at least to me. I want to now explain how Radha and Krishna directly create and directly are the energetic beings, Lord Shiva and Goddess Parvati. And I want to speak about how they are the ultimate sources of all of that energetic dimensional security within this universe. Lord Shiva and Goddess Parvati are lovers. Their love, their passionate relationship is the source of many offspring in this universe. Their passion is the passion of mother and father. It results in family. It results in community, in society. It results in a situation which is unique within this particular universe that is not necessarily analogous to the other realms of Radha and Krishna. Indeed, even their deity, their Murti, the Shiva Linga, is the specific manifestation, or shall we say, expression and acknowledgement of that role. It is the genital of Lord Shiva and Goddess Parvati as the seed-giving father and the mother of all nature in this universe. They are the specific way in which Radha and Krishna support us and nurture us in their in their love, in their concern, in their desire that we feel that security as we go through interdimensional space. When we do our journeying through interdimensional space in our meditations, it is simply a accelerated version of what we anyway do through our evolutionary journey through many hundreds or thousands of years. Now, I'm sorry that it is taking me quite some time to create this explanation, and I know it is difficult to hear for a long time, but I really want to give you the complete picture as far as I've understood and realized. Because when one sees the framework within which one does these accelerated transformational meditations, it becomes much more powerful. And I don't see any reason to take the slow route anymore. I don't see any reason to beat around the bush and suggest and hint. But I want to just go forward steadily into what really is. And not everybody will understand, accept, or even appreciate it. I can't do anything about that. For us who do our journey, we are supported by the Mother, by Goddess Parvati. And she, in turn, is supported by the Father, Lord Shiva, and supports him. And contrary to perhaps prejudiced belief, when we journey to their energy, the next step towards Radha and Krishna is very much easier to make. In fact, it is a short journey. Indeed, you would be very surprised. One may think, if one is prejudiced in another way, one may think, Lord Shiva, Goddess Parvati, I'm at the end. There's no need to go anywhere else. And if somebody suggests, or even they think of, or even are pointed towards another direction, they say, no, it's not that way. This is it. This is the end. And then there are those who say, from the other point of view, it's just Radha Krishna. It's just Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. There's nothing below that of any interest whatsoever. You just go directly to the Supreme, you got everything. You know, once you've got the million, you don't need the tens, the twenties. They use that example. Sure, we can understand each point of view. I personally don't ascribe to either point of view. Interestingly, when Lord Chaitanya used to go on his pilgrimages, he went to hundreds of Shiva temples. And the whole of India had such conceptions in their mind. Now, when we go towards the lotus feet of Lord Shiva, Goddess Parvati, we feel their support as mother and father. In that way, we become part of their family. Their family is the whole universe. And when we acknowledge, just by being aware of it, so many experiences open up to us in that understanding. We just see everything completely differently. We feel to such a degree, to such an intensity. It just gives such an incredible taste. And when we have that contact, when they feel, when we feel, when it is the right moment to go and to meet Radha and Krishna, is a direct pathway. So today, we are going to do interdimensional traveling again. I don't think that should frighten anyone. For those of you who have already experienced it, you just say, oh, that's nice. If there's anybody whose mind is saying, I just can't accept this, I would really appreciate if you would just do something else right now, because that kind of energy is not very helpful to us at this point, at least to the rest of us. All of this is naturally voluntary. And using the same principle that Lord Chaitanya used to use when he had kirtans, that those who have a similar capacity and a similar vibration when they come together, the effect of it is extraordinary, and those who bring in something else distort it, pollute it, and drag it down. Yet, on the other hand, I don't want to discourage anybody by saying, oh God, I'm not qualified. That's ridiculous. The only qualification required is, number one, you want to. Number two, you will accept it. And number three, you don't block anything out with your prejudice. So anyway, I just thought I'd say that. So today we're going to move one step more in our journey. For Goddess Parvati will introduce us to Lord Shiva. And that is a very auspicious thing. Sometimes things just are. And there's no need to worry about why they are, how they are, but rather to just be happy that they are. Actually, it's nice that things are what they are, because it gives us a chance to experience them. Trying to squeeze reality, trying to squeeze something out of reality which isn't there already. Of course, that experience in and of itself is real, but to just accept what is there is so much better. Reaching out for something is, yes, a way to get it. Accepting it when it comes to you is a very wonderful way to get it. And after all, the best things in life are free. There's no doubt about it. I don't think you can pay for something that has value. Not with money, anyway. You can't pay for love. You can't pay for peace. You can't pay for evolution or deep transformation. These are things which come from within us. Raja says, don't worry, be happy. I like that. Mayor Baba revisits us from the past. I always liked him. He was a very nice, pleasant person. He said, don't worry, be happy. I mean, it's a very nice thing to say. Very difficult thing to do, but quite nice to say. I think when you're in the right mood, in the right situation, and in the right energy, that makes all the sense in the world. You're welcome. Actually, technically, I didn't really lead you. I mean, I just repeated the real leader. Okay. Oh, if anybody has something to say, I'm getting some comments. I'm happy for you. Actually, I just got the comment. Somebody said, I never felt such connections before, but actually you did. You just didn't accept them. Actually, every one of us have had. We remember. These experiences are not something new to us. They are something we are remembering again. These are experiences which are familiar to us, which are comfortable to us, and which make us remember what we are. Experiences which we, for some reason or another, had a difficulty accepting before. Yes, go ahead. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Oh, you can do whatever you want. I lost control of all of this some time back. Well, I guess they would influence it as much as you wish it to. Anything will influence anything as much as you wish it to. You empower things. You empower them. By giving them importance, you empower them. By concentrating on them, you empower them. That works in a positive way, that can work in a negative way. You can empower something negatively if you want. You can turn it into a monster if you want. If it suits your purposes, if you have a need to do so, you can certainly do so. And at the same time, you can create positive connections if you want to. You have enormous capacity to do that. Not only as an individual, but by those you associate with. You create a group meditation on a negativity or a positivity, or basically, usually it's a mixture of all between. That's why I want in these travels that only people who wish to actually do them come. I mean, if you want to stay home and complain, please do that. If you know what I mean. I mean, as a figure of speech. Yes, I knew that it was a difficulty for some people because they wanted to see. They think that the experience should be visual. I knew that, but I didn't want to say it because other people had no problem. So I didn't want to comment on it. Vision does not... When you are in a higher dimensional space, experiences are not differentiated into specific sensual categories. That's very important to understand. It is not that there is something you see and something you hear and something you smell and taste and touch, and these things are separate experiences that you concentrate on one at a time. All of the experience comes as a package, a complete package, a complete awareness. The feeling, the complete connection is a package. If you worry, right, I can't see, that means, number one, you expect it, and number two, you are rejecting part of the experience by your fear or your worry or your anxiety to see. Yeah, that's what I was talking about before. The vision is not the significant factor. The significant factor is the feeling, the experience, the connection. If you cannot see, it does not diminish the value of the experience slightly. But if that feeling of insufficiency fills you with anxiety, that anxiety, that feeling that, oh, there's something I'm missing here, diminishes the experience. And really, this has to be understood because this is the filter that ruins the experience. And if you just simply accept what is coming, that's the experience. And to whatever degree you say, I'm not getting enough, or I'm not getting something, you are rejecting what you have. Understand? That's a very essential point, the whole key to everything. You are getting a gift. Just accept it. Be gracious. Just accept it. Don't say, oh, I expected it to be like that. I hope that's very clear, because this is the number one reason why experiences become distorted. When people say, I was expecting something else. It should have been like this. I can't do this. Therefore, I'm not experiencing. If you only experience one thing, one feeling, anything, one small thing, and you just completely embrace that experience with all your awareness, understand? You have the full experience at that moment. This is the yoga of this situation. To have that one connection, or more, but just to have something that you can hold on to. It will just expand from there. But don't even worry about that. Who cares if it expands? Just be aware of it. Experience it. It's wonderful. On these levels, one experience is worth a lifetime. Down here, experiences. I don't know how to say that better. It didn't come out right. But now, some people, I understand, some people are coming into this new. They are not practiced in meditations. They are not practiced in visualizations. They are not practiced in making connections. For them, it's difficult. After all, some of us have been doing this now with me for 7 years. There experiences are broad, they're deep, they have power. Yet their power is feeding the experience so that others who have less experience can be brought along the way. In other words, it's, come along, come with us, yes, it's fine, we'll take you with us. But in all of what we do, there are certain, prerequisites. There are certain, I don't want to call them techniques, but certain meditative systems or certain systems we are using, which are I use as givens, but which actually require some training. And in that particular meditation, we used quite a few. So I'm going to just review them for those persons who are not really familiar with these things. The first thing we did today was we discussed what we were going to do and why we were going to do it. That's very important, to know what and why. Because this prepares us for some endeavor, whatever it may be. Because we require to be focused. We require to have intention to make something the way it should be or the way we wish it to be. It builds desire. It creates enthusiasm. And most importantly, it unites us as a group of people who are here and now united energetically with the same purpose. Then we sat ourselves comfortably just so that we are preparing ourselves mentally, physically, that we are going to do something special here. And then we are going to just relax and feel safe in our surroundings. Feel safe in our bodies. And there were certain places in the body which feel always tension. That's between the eyes and the forehead. Everybody's got tension there. There's the back of the neck, there's tension there. There's down where we sit and where our legs meet our torso, there's always tension there. So quickly, to go fast, we just relax those places. But if we had unlimited time, I would go through the full relaxation that we have done in the past, where you start at the top of your body and go all the way down through every single part, step by step, relaxing it until you are just a puddle of relaxation in your chair. For those who know the technique of relaxation, have done it many, many times, all I really have to say is, now relax and let go. And everybody just lets go and relaxes, and they're already there. So now we are relaxed. But in this relaxed state, we have certain responsibilities. We have to stay alert. And when we do travel, we have to have two parts of our body very much aware. That is the vision, where we see where we're going. And that means in depth. That doesn't just mean a picture. It means in all ways, a depth of feeling, a depth of awareness. It's basically the awareness. So we work on being aware of the third eye and the way in which three eyes create an extra dimension of awareness. Now that presumed an awful lot of preliminary work. We've done a lot of work in the past on, you know, understanding the weak energetic side and bringing the energy over from the strong side to the weak side, filling ourselves up, and then again merging the energies between the weak and strong and making a cohesive male-female balance. We've worked on that. We are aware of what it feels like when there's a strong energetic side and a weak energetic side. We've done this. We also know how to do the bouncing ball in our brains to balance, to break down the barrier, to balance the energies on both sides between the rational and the intuitive. And when we're concentrating between the weak side and the third eye, we're making a bond where our energies shift from the concentration of the natural strong side to the weak side and strengthen it. And then when they're both equal, we let it all balance. That's what the flow was. So the technique of balancing the male and female energy and strengthening the weak was very specifically used in this creating a vast awareness through the universal dimensions. It's a very essential prerequisite. And then, immediately, we got the power through being aware of the place where the Kundalini resides. And we had to bring it to these two energy centers which were relevant for our travel. And when there was a great connection and power, we started our journey. For most, this was easy because this was something we've done week after week for years. All I have to do is do this. I have to say is do this. Everybody does it. I don't have to explain how. But the problem is now there are many who've never done this before. And if I have to go all the way back to the beginning, then nobody accomplishes anything. So I'm kind of trying to make a compromise. And it's the responsibility of everybody who knows what they're doing to give such energy that everybody can join in, even if they don't know what they're doing. And I would appreciate it if there are people in particular geographical locations who already know how to do this, if they could train those who don't know how to do it so that they can become very powerful contributors to what we are doing. And if there are people who, if there are physical locations where there are groups of people who don't know how to do any of this, then we could arrange specific courses where I could train these very essential building blocks of meditative technique just to that group. I have on my very long list of things to do, I should make DVD presentations of this so that you can just get them mailed to you and you can do it on your own. But that's on a very long things to do list, and I'm just here alone. I mean, we are advancing quite rapidly already. You can download copies of these lectures from our website, harimedia.net, but we run out of space very rapidly, and we're going to have to get other servers, too, to do this. But we are very lucky because Mahabhuta and in Germany and Devendra in France are very generously supporting our whole endeavor here. Economically, we should be very grateful to them and for helping us in this way. Now, when you are in that state to go forward, then at that point you have to be very, very sensitive and aware of the energies that come to you. This presupposes a whole nother set of meditative techniques. It presupposes sensitivity to energy, to be able to feel your own chakras, how information comes into them, to feel the energy of others. It's a whole nother meditative practice, to feel the energy of others like that. So when you can feel like that, then you can feel when these wonderful assistants, when these wonderful personalities come to us and interact with us. You can connect to them because you learn how to tune your frequencies, your vibrations to these personalities rapidly. In St. Petersburg, we have spent many, many days learning how to tune to the deities, how to feel them, how to just feel their presence, their energy, and create an usness with us, with them, that is so wonderful. And those who have that capacity can immediately connect with those personalities who come. They know how to let go of their own personal desire to control and just go with the flow of the energy, to be introduced to others. And ultimately to just feel and experience and allow the experience to take place. And even more importantly, to know how to appropriately reciprocate these experiences. Although when I just said that, I just thought, now how do you appropriately reciprocate having a darshan like that? I mean, what's an appropriate reciprocation? I have no idea. It's just whatever it is. But if at least you're open to such a reciprocation, you can do it. So I was responding to Daksha Kanya's question or her comment, and I wonder if she could tell me if that helped. You can just say yes or no. I'm looking at you. Anyway, I tried to give as good explanations as I could. If you wish to discuss this further, there are forums in the harimedia.net where we could discuss more. I'm well aware of the language problem in harimedia.net. It's all in English, and many people feel themselves at a disadvantage because of that, and I'm sorry, but I write in English. I mean, I don't know how to do it with any other way. Okay, so I'll end it here, and I wish you all the very best, and with full blessings in everything you do, with full prosperity and success. May you fulfill your dreams and get all those wonderful things that you deserve. You all deserve them too. And I wish you great luck and great happiness, great peace, and a lot of love. Good luck. That's fine. I'll accept it. Bye-bye. Signing off.